Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. We are here. We are at podcast number 99, the last podcast before the big 100, before we hit triple digits. It's been a long process, and I am so looking forward to joining with all of you to celebrate number 100. But a quick little surprise, a little announcement. Ken Milne from the Eschen, the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine, will be with us for the number 100, just like he was with number 50, to celebrate and talk about Total EM and to talk about a good little topic. We're going to talk about skepticism. And so if you've noticed as of late, we have talked a lot about certain topics that are highly controversial and maybe or may not have the best evidence behind it. And we talk about that quite a bit. So how does this tie in today? Well, one of the five things we're going to talk about, because Ken Milne likes five, and we're going to stick with five, but the five are going to be a surprise. But a little teaser, one of those five things is going to be about mechanical CPR. And reasonably, a skeptic for mechanical CPR. I'm going to talk about it a little more here in a second, kind of give you some of my views as a little preview and talking about some of the evidence that exists out there too, as well as some of the stuff that Ken has covered on his own podcast, along with some other great people like Rebel EM and stuff like that. But check out the show notes for all that good stuff. In the meantime, though, what we're going to talk about is how this gets used, why, what benefits could there still be, all that good stuff. So I just kind of want to talk about, does mechanical CPR work? MCPR is the other thing it's referred to by. And basically also decide, is it really worth the money for it to do something like this? Let's talk about what mechanical CPR actually means for a second. So these are devices that are automated pieces of equipment that provide chest compressions during a cardiac arrest. And the idea is that they're supposed to provide more consistent and higher quality compressions than a human can deliver because they don't tire out and they're going to give the same type of compression every single time. Good in theory. We'll talk about that more here in a second. Now there's two types. There is the band, like the Zoll autopulse, or there's the pneumatic piston type. You can see this with the Lucas, or you can see the same thing by the Michigan Instruments, where they have this as well. The two most common ones I see in my area are the autopulse and the Lucas, and those are the ones that I've worked with the most. A lot of times in the hospital setting, it seems like we tend to have the Lucas more than the autopulse, and there's a few reasons why behind that. There are some great FOMED resources, by the way, to help cover and go into a lot more detail about this if you really want to understand more about some of the differences, why the Lucas in some ways may be better for in-hospital, and why the autopulse is still considered good in certain other ways. My favorite one about it is Life in the Fast Lane. They have a great little review there. But I don't want to waste too much time on that because that's something that it just depends on what you're working with about why you're going to use it and how you're going to use it. But in general, the perceived benefits of mechanical CPR is that you're going to have consistent quality of your compressions. You're going to have fewer pauses. You're going to be avoiding exhaustion in prolonged resuscitations because, let's face it, people tire out over time when they're pushing on someone's chest. You're also going to provide for a safer retrieval and transport, especially in confined areas, but also in the situation when you have someone who's going down the highway and trying to get to the hospital and they're still in arrest. So it'd be better to not have to stand up and do chest compressions when you're unrestrained. If you can have the machine do this for you, that's a huge benefit. It also requires fewer personnel to be in the resuscitation area. It could potentially allow for procedures to be performed, such as PCI and ECMO. And the reason why the PCI and ECMO part I find very interesting is because this will help free up some resources. You can take them straight to the lab. You can do it in the ED. There's different things about that. But the centers that talk about it and have PCI and ECMO, that's one huge benefit for them for why they're using it. However, these machines are definitely not free. They cost, and they have to require regular service and maintenance, just like any other electronic piece of equipment or most other pieces of equipment in general in the hospital or in the pre-hospital setting. And it's limited to being only appropriate for certain populations. So in general, they're not recommended for children, obese patients, pregnant patients, and so on and so forth. There's certain little niches otherwise, but those are the big three: children, obese, and pregnant. And unfortunately, there are other issues that can come up with it as well, such as people can develop a pneumothorax or have other iatrogenic events, or they can also, the machine, the device can be displaced over time, so no longer are you providing chest compressions over the optimal part. This happens at humans, though, so I kind of find that one a little sketchy, but it's still one that it's a legitimate concern. Probably the biggest negative to the idea of mechanical CPR is the lack of the evidence based on the current trials. And originally, the research did seem favorable, and over time, there were concerns of potentially worsening outcomes. We'll talk about that more with the care registry in a second. But the last few trials over the last few years, the big ones being CERC, LINC, and Paramedic, they essentially found no statistically significant difference in outcomes. And those trials can be discussed more on some, again, great websites for it, because I don't want to go into a lot of detail. But essentially, all three show the same thing, is that they don't appear to have any improvement in outcomes. But at the same time, it doesn't look like they have anything worse. They're just there. There are major caveats with each one of these papers, which is why it's good to do a separate deep dive on those versus us trying to cover it all here right now. But keep in mind that there were other trials that were added for a recent systematic review and meta-analysis. There was the Aspire from 2006 and then Smekel et al. In 2011. So five trials were used in that systematic review and meta-analysis. And basically, it showed kind of the same sort of thing, just not really any definite evidence on where it works. And maybe certain patient populations would have better benefits to them. The reason why this all kind of comes into consideration is because in 2016, the CARES registry came out. Now, it's important to keep in mind that this was an observational study. So correlation versus causation is something we have to seriously consider here. But this time, this trial did have some negative findings to it, which led to even more debate because of it. Again, keep in mind, observational versus an RCT-type trial. With that in mind, we have to keep a couple things here real quick, which is why I think it's worth mentioning, because it doesn't really get mentioned anywhere else, is when we're using observational studies, unless there's a really good specific reason, and I mean, they did a great job. The CARES registry was very well designed and went into quite a bit of detail, but I think something needs to be said about when you go from the quality of an RCT trial to then switch back to observational and say, well, the observational, this trial is negative, but you had RCTs with kind of some decent controls given. Again, there are some caveats with them. But I don't feel like the CARES registry is enough to say, hey, we should stop doing it because there were some negative outcomes with it. Because again, it's not randomized control trial. We have some better evidence out there, some better types of evidence, higher in the hierarchy of evidence, at least. So I think something we forget about with mechanical CPR is that maybe we're not seeing benefits because of how it's being done and because of the patients, because there's a lot of crossover between mechanical CPR versus CPR done by humans, whereas the latter tends to sometimes get involved at some step of the way of mechanical CPR. Which leads me to think that realistically, maybe what we need to talk about is the CPR really going to make a huge difference in that role, or is it going to help us in other ways? Like I mentioned before with PCI and ECMO and other procedures like that, it takes a lot of people, a lot of space, a lot of room, and you really have to avoid the interruptions. You really need the space around you to work on. And by having something mechanical doing this, a lot of these places prefer to do that. I think that's something that's growing and something that's becoming more common. But we also have to recognize the fact that mechanical CPR is simply a bridge to something else. So there could be some additional benefits in the hospital setting versus the pre-hospital setting. That I think is going to take some more time with specific research to show that. But I still like the idea of it in the pre-hospital setting for the biggest reason of safety. I've been in the back of an ambulance going 100 plus miles an hour when they are doing chest compressions with it. It's dangerous. I don't like it. I would rather us do something where we are safely sitting down or in a better restrained position than in the back standing, trying to keep our balance while doing chest compressions. We're just not getting A, as good a quality compressions, and B, we're really risking injuries with this. If we can avoid that, that's great. Now, I know some places are doing CPR only in the field and all call codes in the field and stuff like that. That's great if you're avoiding the whole transport situation, but most of those systems still will transport under certain circumstances. So why not just use something that's a little bit safer if your system can afford it and it's worthwhile? You also want to make sure that your hospitals can then use the same thing, because that's another thing I've run into is where pre-hospital, they're using something different than is being used in the hospital. So it just doesn't work out. But ultimately, the biggest thing is that we want to make sure that we are not causing harm with our patients. So yes, I'm skeptical with mechanical CPR. I don't think that there is something right now, evidence-wise, that we can prove whether or not it truly works. But I do like the idea of a couple of things that mechanical CPR offers. One is the safety and transport, and the fact that we get consistency in rather austere environments in the pre-hospital setting. In the hospital, I really like, too, it helps reduce, well, and this is, can be used in the pre-hospital setting, too, the fact that it reduces the number of people you need for resuscitation, because you can actually put on, especially the Lucas device, very quickly with very minimal interruptions. You can do it within seconds. There's a nice little video on that, too, which we'll include in the show notes. And the nice thing about all of this is you can do it rather quickly, and now you have fewer people that you need. You don't have this conga line of people who all have to be helping out doing chest compressions. Instead, you have a machine that's doing it, and then now you have a couple of nurses in the room, plus the PA, physician, NP, whoever is going to help lead the resuscitation, and maybe a few other people depending on what specific needs you have. But you can really cut down the staff in the room and control that chaos even that much more by having something that's just rhythmically going in the background, making the chest compressions happen. Again, I realize that this is controversial, like all the other stuff we've been talking about recently, TPA, mobile stroke units, all that good stuff. But I feel like it's something that's still worth talking about, and maybe there's a little more hope with that. Maybe. Because there are some practical uses for it, even if we don't have the strong evidence for it. I'm sure Ken and I here are going to talk about it more, and that's going to be fun because he may have some different opinions for it. I'm sure he does. But I really think that the benefit is with the bridge to other therapies or with safety or controlling chaos or stuff like that. Maybe it's not something where we can maybe get the right study yet to show that it's beneficial, but I think if we look and we maybe study something that way, we might find a little more benefit. But ultimately, in the end, I think this is going to be a great talk. I'm looking forward to talking to Ken about this and a lot of other topics. Stay tuned. Be ready. In the meantime, share this podcast. Share it with some colleagues, some friends. Talk about this a little bit because we're about to hit the triple digits. I'm so excited, and I'm glad we could do this with you. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.